Thursday, the 21st of January, 2021, on Connecticut Today, we featured Governor Ned Lamont's second briefing of the week regarding the coronavirus situation and the ongoing rollout of the vaccines for COVID. That was in the 3 o'clock hour. 5 o'clock hour, Randy Landrino joined us. He heads an organization that looks out for inventors. He says inventors have really been getting beaten up by big tech.
A few weeks, I think we're now at about 5.2% is the 7-day average, sort of along the lines of Rhode Island and Massachusetts, a little less than New York. But I think you should know something. I mean, our rates in this region are going down a bit, and the rates across the country are going down a little bit. Hospitalizations down 55. Of course, that's a key metric and extraordinary good news. Fatalities plus 48. No good news there at all. But because of declining positivity and because of we've had a pretty stable COVID front, you know, really now going on for a couple of months, this is an appropriate time. I thought our schools are getting back open again. About half our kids have the option for in-person education, which is, again, I think very important for a lot of families, a lot of kids, a lot of teachers, and really some of the best in the region, which I'm very appreciative of. Really happy to say that Danbury and New Haven, those kids have been out of school for, you know, quite some time. At least for the elementary kids, they have an in-person option now, so that's good progress. And as of a couple of days ago, we started practice for our winter sports, and those games start, I guess, on February 1st. So we're watching the metrics carefully, but we are continuing to make progress, I think, every day. Some of that, I think, is thanks to the vaccination program rolling out. We've done pretty well here in the state of Connecticut in terms of getting off more, a higher percentage of our people vaccinated. 47,000 people over the age of 75 vaccinated. About close to 260,000 vaccines overall distributed so far. There's one choke point. You know, we need more vaccines. And I've got the opportunity to now explain to the White House and others what this means and how we got to do everything we can to accelerate the production of vaccines. We've in Connecticut, and I think increasingly states across the country, have the capacity to vaccinate a lot more people if we had it. Josh and I just got off the phone with some of the leaders from Pfizer. Obviously have a strong Connecticut presence, probably the lead vaccine in the country. A majority of ours comes from Pfizer. And they said, look, right now there's a real chance that by the end of February, we'll have doubled the production of vaccines. And by the end of March, we could do that again. And we just said, look, it's really helpful to give us some planning so we can make sure we have the capacity out there. But we do right now have the capacity to use those vaccines. Seeing is believing. We get 1 week allocations from the feds. So those are the dates we still have in our projections. But there may be some good news coming forward there. What else do we have? Who's been vaccinated so far? You can see that start from the bottom up, for those who are older, 85 and over, 21% have received their first dose, 75 to 84, 15% have received their first dose. So enough to make a real difference. I think you can see the numbers go down a little bit as you get much younger. You may say, well, how come 65 to 74 is a little less likely to have been vaccinated than 10 years their junior? I think because 10 years their junior, they're still working in healthcare. So they were there as part of those public health essential workers, while 65 to 74 were a little more likely to be retired. It's worth noting when it comes to vaccines, when it comes to the protocols, when it comes to what we can learn and how we can do better, pleased that the National Governors Association, led by Andrew Cuomo, has recognized the good work that Connecticut has done and recognize the good work that Tennessee has done. So they made Governor Bill Lee of Tennessee and myself, chairman of the COVID, governor's group. We are going to act as the interface with the federal government, distilling best practices from all of our fellow governors, and being able to take our message to the federal government, how important it is to use the Defense Production Act, jumpstart production of the vaccines, give us a couple weeks notice so we can count on that production going forward. I will say it's also as regards, it's COVID and public health and public safety. And we'll be taking the lead there as well, putting together the rest of our governors on that front. Public safety involves cybersecurity, which knows no state borders. Very important that we do this on a regional basis. I've been on that public cybersecurity task force for the governors for the last couple of years. I come out of that world. So just other reasons that will be represented there. And finally, we'll also be in charge of the Guard. The Connecticut Guard, the National Guard, and making recommendations. So happy that President Biden is giving us 100% reimbursement for our guards. You know how incredibly important their work has been to date. This is just an example of some, we know about our 5,000 guardsmen. Most of them are posted overseas in at great harm, leaving family and loved ones behind. But in addition, there have been about 1,500 every day, those guards, especially over the last year, the Connecticut Guard taking the lead in terms of COVID, when it comes to setting up our mobile field hospitals, when it comes to the warehouse and PPE distribution, helping out with food distribution. The Guard has been going to the nursing homes, making sure that the testing and infection protocols are being strictly enforced. A big shout out to our guard. I'm here with General Yvonne, and he and I have been talking about some way that I can thank those guardsmen who have been on the front line here in Connecticut every day. Here in Connecticut, protecting our state capital, which thank God nothing untoward happened over the last 5 days. We did send a few hundred guardsmen down to Washington, D.C. as well. Look, prevention, nothing wrong with prevention. It made an enormous difference in terms of keeping a very successful inauguration safe. With that, we've got General Yvonne here for questions, as well as Paul and Josh. In the interest of time, why don't we just jump to questions?
News 8.
So, Governor, I know it's only day one and the Biden administration just signing the executive orders now. What do you see as they're kind of starting from scratch to revamp? We don't have enough vaccine now. You're saying, is it going to go down before it goes up? And I hear we're getting about 50,000 doses a week. Is that still what's happening, the case?
Yeah, we're getting almost 50,000 doses a week. That is not going to go down. What we are working on with Pfizer, and I was talking to my friends in the COVID team down in Washington, what we can expect in terms of a ramp up. What are the bottlenecks in the supply chain? What can the feds do with their Defense Procurement Act to speed things up? Right now, I'd say the number one bottleneck is probably the incredibly customized, specialized equipment you need to mix the vaccines, and it's not something you mass produce. Okay, we knew that, but we also knew that 3 months ago. Where are we in that process? That's what we're going to be asking.
Okay, and then looking forward, New York across the border is now saying just because you have a reservation, you might not get it. Is Connecticut in that situation?
No. Right now, you get a reservation, you're going to get your vaccine delivered on schedule.
And a final question. Massachusetts just opened up across the borders restaurants, got rid of the curfew on Monday. Will you do the same, or are you considering that?
Not yet. I'll tell you why. As I mentioned, our schools are just reopening right now. Our high school sports are just coming back. Colleges are just coming back. We've had another couple of the extremely infectious strain of virus. So I think it's really prudent to let's take a look in a couple of weeks. But I appreciate the trend.
Thank you, Governor.
Channel 3 Eyewitness News.
Yes, Governor, a quick question about the vaccine timetable. Is it dependent on other companies, say Johnson & Johnson or AstraZeneca, to offer their versions of the vaccine? Or is the current timetable that we have based on the two companies that we have right now, the Moderna and the Pfizer vaccines?
It's based on Moderna, based on Pfizer, what we've got right now, and what the allocation has been over the last few weeks continuing forward. If Johnson & Johnson comes forward, we get something, say, a green light by the middle of February, that will be incremental to everything we've projected, and that'll be, we'll be able to vaccinate those vulnerable populations even faster.
You could see an acceleration then to this timetable.
I'd like to see that.
NBC Connecticut.
Good afternoon. Piggybacking on the question you were asked regarding New York, wondering, Yale New Haven Hospital says they need more vaccines. So is Connecticut even at risk at running out like New York?
No. The 46,900 we've gotten them consistently. We've got them allocated. Could I use five times that amount? Absolutely. Do I hear from hospitals every day, give me more? Absolutely. But that's why we're doing this by appointment. We got this on a schedule. We narrowed the cohort of people who can get it. And if they give us more vaccines, we can speed it up.
These vaccination clinics like the one at Dunkin' Donuts Park are going up very quickly. How are you getting the word out to people to let them know these sites are available?
Josh or General Yvonne, do you want to talk about how we're getting the word out?
Absolutely. So again, as always, the best place to go for information is ct.gov/COVID vaccine. We maintain up-to-date lists. We're getting ready to actually post a interactive map as well, similar to what we did for testing sites, as we see a continued proliferation of more of these sites around the state. But as the governor said right now, we are already at a point where there is far more capacity built today to administer doses than we have supply coming in from the federal government by a significant order of magnitude. And we have multiple sites around the state who can do more than they're doing right now, but we just don't have the supply to give them. So as the governor said, the patience is required simply because we don't have enough coming into the state, not because we lack sites or people to administer the doses. It's just we need more vaccine.
How do you rein big tech in? You don't want to crush them. You know, hundreds of millions of people use Amazon and Google and Twitter, but when is enough enough? When is too much too much? Our next guest is president of U.S. Investor, Randy Landrino, here to talk about that and his organization. Randy, hi. Paul here at WICC. How are you?
Hi, Paul. And it's actually U.S. Inventor.
I'm sorry. Yes, I. You know what? The coffee wore off about an hour ago. I said to him, God, U.S. Inventor, Randy. First of all, before we get to big tech, tell me what your company's about.
Well, we are a nonprofit corporation that is totally dedicated to the restoration of the rights of inventors in America. And you say, well, what rights do inventors have? Well, the one right an inventor is supposed to have is when you have a patent on something, that patent is supposed to mean that you can legally stop some other individual or entity from just taking it. In other words, you're supposed to own it, and you can license it to them if you want. You can sell it to them, or you can have a startup, and it could be a very disruptive startup that might compete with some of the huge entities that we have now. In fact, That is really the gist of our conversation today. Historically, the way big corporations didn't become huge monopolies is that disruptive competition would show up. Disruptive, meaning something would come out that they hadn't thought of, and somebody would have a patent on it, so they couldn't just take it, and suddenly they would be facing competition. And they would have to, and of course, they would try to out-innovate that competition. And you know what? Innovation is good. Innovation is good for humanity and for everybody. But what has happened, and this isn't – here's the thing about disruptive competition. Think about it. You're a big, giant corporation. You might have started as a disruptive startup.
Yeah.
And most of these guys did.
Sure.
Think about it, you know? Yeah, like one or two individuals in a garage or apartment or whatever. it's kind of how it almost always goes. And when they start out, they typically don't have any money or very little, but they have good ideas. And when the patent system was working the way it should be, they'd get a patent and they'd have something that they could use to get a step up on the competition, get a foothold and do something and not just get crushed. But for many, many years, big corporations have been working to reduce the rights of inventors and weaken the patent system. It's kind of crazy, but it goes all the way back to 1850. A woman named Zarina Khan, Khan, is a historian who's studied this and written about it. And what she says is basically, someone will invent something. This new technology creates a new industry. It's the hot industry of the time. And in the early years, there are a lot of lawsuits, and the big corporations being sued for patent infringement use their political influence to try to weaken the patent system. And all the way, telegraph, telephone, locomotive, automobile, all the way up to smartphones, right? And luckily, back then, our politicians held firmer than they hold now on issues like this. And then maybe they realized the value of inventors more and innovation. But secondly, big tech, which is the hot industry now, so they're the ones who would be trying to weaken the system. They have so much more ability than any corporations ever had through the internet and social media to shape public opinion and to push a false narrative to achieve legislation, in this case, to destroy the rights of inventors. And they've done it.
You see, Randy, I would think the common American like me, just, Joe Schmo here, suburban white guy, I would think that, okay, somebody has a patent on something, and that's it. Yeah. And they develop whatever, and I would think that if Apple or Google or Amazon approaches them and say, hey, we noticed you have this, you have a little startup going, listen, we think this is really cool. And we're prepared to offer you $5, $10, $15, $20 million. Anything's for sale, like an old boss of mine used to say. And I'm sure that does happen. You hear about these startups that get bought out, and Randy, these people can take care of their families for the rest of their lives. But are you to say that some of these big tech companies, if they are rebuffed, they go this route, or they go this route without even making an offer sometimes? What is it?
There are numerous examples. I mean, and I must say that where this all kind of went into high gear is about 2013, okay? Because a law was passed in 2011 called the America Invents Act, which created an easier way to invalidate an existing patent. And we can talk about that more. But it really got going in 2013. And so what you have now, where previously it was quite a bit harder to invalidate a patent. Litigation was what it was. And, if you had a good case, in fact, the way most inventors have ever even gotten to court is through contingency representation, right? So that's for your listeners. That's where, of course, you may not have any money, but if you have a good case, the attorney takes it on and shares in the winnings, and you don't have to pay him very much in the meantime.
Absolutely.
Patent litigation. Patent litigation is ridiculously expensive.
Oh, I would imagine.
But that was So, historically, that's how you would fight one of these cases. In fact, I have a friend that did this about 30 years ago against a big car company, and he won and got a couple of million, and they were guilty as hell, and they had to pay, But now, with this new process, I'll just let you know what it is. It's called the Patent Trial and Appeal Board, which we call the PTAB. It's an administrative court. And which means you don't have a jury and you don't have much due process like you would in a real court. And you don't have a lifetime appointed judge. Instead of a lifetime appointed judge, you have a panel of three individuals who are called judges, who are basically corporate attorneys. And in some cases, they're attorneys who have actually worked for the very company that is trying to invalidate your patent.
Randy, in the interest of time here, I just want to cut to the chase. It's just the average person is listening to this. Say, wait a minute. If I invented a widget that nobody else has, what right does any big company have to come after me? And I guess look, we all love lawyers. I have them in the family. I'm sure you know them too. But is this a case of like, screw it, we'll sue, we'll go after them until they say uncle? Is that what we got here?
Yeah, basically. I mean, basically what happens, and I have examples of it, where you have something that's very unique, never been done before, patented, and someone from one of these big tech entities approaches you and looks like they're going to license it from it. They get all the information they can from you, and rather than license it, they kind of, everything goes silent, and then you find out they're producing it on their own.
They steal it.
And you... Yes, and then you try to stop them, and they, of course, first try to get you into this administrative court to invalidate your patent, which they usually are able to do. And if they get you there, there's an 84% chance, assuming you go all the way through it, 84% chance they will invalidate your patent, and you'll have nothing.
Unreal, and, unreal. Randy, I do have to take a break here. Hang on, we'll be right back. Okay. Our guest is the president of U.S. Inventor. Randy Landrenault is the guest. They have the big tech companies become too powerful, not really politically, but can they just steal, essentially, any good idea if they don't want to be above board and pay the rights to license it or to buy it from you in total? Randy, hang on. Traffic and weather together right here, 516 on WICC. The website, usinventor.org. Run it all together, usinventor.org. They stand up for the rights of innovators, inventors, dreamers, and builders. And we'll spend a few more minutes here with the head of the usinventor.org, the president there, Randy Landrenault. Randy, we only got about 5 minutes here, so a couple things I want to take into account here. So we have a new administration now in D.C., and on the break, I did remember this controversy popping up on my show a few years ago about what happened, as you say, in 2011 into 2012. Is the incoming Biden administration, do you think, going to be, and the members of Congress that we have now, is this going to be any better for inventors to shield them from some of these shenanigans?
Well, we are definitely going to be working hard and hopeful to some degree that it might be. But I will tell you again, remember who we're talking about, big tech. Well, I think as we know, big tech is pretty close to the new administration. And, you know, they will be working to get somebody that they want as the director of the patent office. Because think about this, that the director of the patent office is a political appointee by the president based typically on who the big donors want. So typically you do have the wrong person running the patent office because the big donors are not the inventors, you know?
Yeah.
And in fact, a few years ago, not this just past director of the patent office, but prior to that, the director of the patent office, when things were really set up to make it go bad around 2011, right? Mm-hmm. 2011, 13, et cetera. Yeah. The head of the patent office was the former head of patent strategy at Google. How about
Shocking.
And amazingly, I know regardless of what people think about various individuals, Trump was not connected to any particular – he didn't owe any big companies
anything. No, he didn't care.
Elected.
No.
And he actually appointed a head of the patent office who was very good, who tried to make some good changes. But he's
out. I read that. Yeah, so in a sense
– viewers.
Yeah, sure.
But go ahead.
No, I was
going to say,
so you're outlining like a fox in the hen house thing here.
Oh, it's on steroids, yeah. And and here's the thing, if you think about it, really a birthright of an American is to be able to invent something, get a patent on it, and do something with it. And if it's really valuable, do something big with it. That's the key to this country and the key to what has created America and what makes America so different than the rest of the world. And this is an issue that everybody should care about, not just inventors or innovative people, but anybody who just cares about America. And one thing that your viewers can do to help us is go to usinventor.org and sign our inventor rights resolution.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be an inventor with patents. It just shows that you care about this, and it helps us when we go to Washington, D.C. and try to tell elected representatives that their voters care about this. We can say, look, here are all these people from your districts who actually signed this. They care about this. So I would urge your viewers, sign the Inventor Rights Resolution at usinventor.org.
Listen, I'm old enough to remember, maybe you are, but I'm old enough to remember when one of the big stories one year was the breakup of Ma Bell, the old telephone company, POTS, plain old television service. I mean, telephone service, yes. We call it here in radio. They broke up Ma Bell, oh my God, to the Baby Bells, and now we have all this consolidation again. Does anybody in D.C. right now, does anybody in D.C. right now, Randy, have the guts to go? And I know a lot of people are, and I am too, Randy. I'm a free market guy, but I often muse on this show. I say, oh, Amazon bought this, Google bought this, bought that. You know, fine, they can offer financial security to a family for years and years. But when is it too much? Or can you just attack them and they will litigate it to death for 20 years?
They'll litigate it to death, and they can keep litigating longer than you can. That's the problem. But unfortunately, in the current system, even if those few inventors who are pretty wealthy, they tend to lose all their money and lose their patents because of how weighted the system is against the patent holder. Here's the thing. We have a bill in Congress now. Of course, we're going to need to reintroduce it in the upcoming administration. It's called the Inventor Rights Act. And what it really does is it restores some of the rights to independent inventors, to actually the little guy. And it's a great bill, and we're going to be pushing again to try to get it passed. But you ask, well, are there politicians who care enough? Well, there certainly are. And I will tell you, this is a bipartisan issue.
Sure.
It's totally bipartisan. And on one side, they think it's the other side, you know, they're the problem. But honestly, it's really both sides. And both sides have voted for the wrong bill that's hurting us. And we find both sides are interested in helping us. But I will tell you that the individuals who are closely tied to big tech, it's just a reality. If you have big tech in your backyard, it's hard for those representatives to do the right thing. I hate to say it.
Yeah, Randy, final question here in about the 2 minutes we have left. If there is somebody listening to me all across Connecticut, and our radio signal goes all across Connecticut, northern Long Island, we have a pretty good signal here. If there's anybody who out there tinkering who says, listen, I came up with this thing, maybe it's a long shot, but I don't know, I'd like to take this thing to market. Can you give me a quick couple of do's and don'ts here for people who may think they have something cool and say, well, I'd like to give this a shot. What do they do?
A book I would recommend is called Patent It Yourself by David Pressman. Pressman. It's a very good book. It's a huge book. It's a great reference. If it's really valuable, right? Potentially, and of course, we all think all our inventions are right.
Yeah.
but what you will need to do, if it's one of the ones that's really valuable that they're going to go after, that you're going to have to fight them over. Okay, and not all inventions are that way. You don't want to just file one patent, right? You want to have a number of, they're called continuation patents, that are actually following that patent. And if you read that book, you'll know what that means, because what that does for you is if you end up in a big fight, they can invalidate one, but you can have other patents issuing that keep you in the game. Another thing you want to do is you want to do whatever you can to get that invention producing income as fast as possible, as much as possible.
Got it.
So that you have enough money to fight. The other thing, though, is you need to become involved with our organization so you can help us win the battle, which will help you and all inventors. Because I will tell you, an individual who did just what I described is kind of famous. If you've ever seen this product, Bunch of Balloons. So Josh Malone invented that, and it went totally viral, and it got ripped off immediately by a big Estee on TV company.
Jeez.
And he ended up, in fact, they bought one of his from his Kickstarter and put it in their first commercial.
Unreal.
And he got into this big 5-year-long fight that cost millions and millions of dollars. He could have lost everything, but he finally won.
Yeah.
And he's a key part of this whole effort to restore our rights. And actually being involved in the fight to restore our rights helped him turn his case around. It'll help anybody out there. But as well, it's just doing the right thing for America. So to all your listeners, I would say help us win this battle and sign our inventor rights resolution.
And that resolution is at usinventor.org, usinventor.org. And the guest has been the president of U.S. Inventor, Randy Landrino. Randy, thank you. Stay in touch. Good luck, and we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy.